different. I'm talking to beat writers from each of the teams in the division. We have, as I record this Sunday night with John Fay, we have John Fay of the Cincinnati Inquirer, covers the Cincinnati Reds. You may have heard of him.
That was a tough one to get.
That was a tough get, yeah. Also, Todd Rosiak of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Bill Brink of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and Patrick Mooney I'm supposed to get tomorrow, but he had a mishap with his phone. So I'm supposed to get him on the phone because he didn't come to the Cubs split squad game, but I think he said he dropped it in a toilet, and he's in Chicago, and I mean, he's in Phoenix. He's from Chicago. I don't know. I'll find out. We'll see what we can do. That ever happened to you, John?
No.
Quick note, instead of Patrick Mooney, we do have Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune. So just keep that in mind as you keep going forward. The division for the season. The Reds, I mean, one of the things I keep asking everybody, John, is about surprises. And I mean, I always kind of, like, some of the surprises are these veteran guys who come in and play well. You know, the Roger Bernardinas of the world last year was the surprise. This year, Chris Dominguez and Brennan Bosch. But, you know, I'm usually trying to talk more about younger guys because those are guys we still don't know about.
Yeah, I think the Reds with Anthony DeSclafani, he's looked really good. I've been really impressed. Brian Price had really picked him as one of the guys that was going to win it from the beginning, and you kind of wondered why just looking on his past record, but he's been really good. So I think
that's a good pick.
Yeah, I you know, the other thing, when you look at a guy like him, he was put in a position where he had to come in and win that position, and to go out and pitch, or he has made four or five starts, he's been good in all but one of them where he gave up three runs in one of them, but other than that, he's been really good. So I think that goes a long way towards solidifying things with the rotation. When you have, we talked about that before, where you have four, you're in pretty good shape because a lot of teams don't have a very good fifth.
Right. And DeSclafani, once Homer gets back, will be the four. And then it looks like Jason Marquis will be the fifth. We will speculate on that and not say it as fact as not to get Brian Price all upset at you again.
Yeah, and, you know, it surprised me a little bit that they're going to have Iglesias or Michael Lorenzen just kind of be the placeholder for Homer rather than have them as the fifth starter. They trust Marquis. They know that if he's what he's been in the past, he can give him the inning. So I think they made that decision pretty early, that just the way it sets up, that it's going to be him and that he's going to be in the rotation.
Yeah.
Basically where he breaks down, it's hard to say.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And Marquis pitched again today. And I don't think, you know, I'd be surprised if he's an all-star like the fifth starter was last year. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, again, it's a fifth starter.
Yeah, and the thing about him is he had a decent year in 13 with San Diego. Then he had the elbow thing, so he's coming off the elbow thing. The thing that surprised me, asking Brian Price what impressed him about him, he said his stuff. So his stuff looks good. He was really good early. He hasn't been as good in his last two starts, so we'll see. You could do worse for a fifth starter than him.
And today actually got in some trouble. This is Sunday. Really, the only thing, he's hit a little bit, but he gave up a really long home run. But that was, you know, the other stuff was kind of dink and dunk. And, I mean, those things happen. And in the end, he pitched six innings and gave up three runs.
Yeah. He's been good in pretty much every time out. So
I think what's interesting is, you know, you look at a guy like Dominguez and Bosch. I mean, these are, you know, again, they could be Roger Bernardina, who had such a great spring last year. But, you know, Bosch has been hitting left-handers as well. Dominguez came in with a reputation of when he hits the ball, he hits it really, really hard, and he's done nothing to disprove that so far.
The thing with Bosch that's impressed me is, I, you know, just looking at his stats and everything, I thought he was going to be this big plodding guy. He's not. He can run. The fact that he can play center field, and they played him a lot there in spring training, that's a big deal, because I think the most at-bats are probably going to be in center field, yeah, where he can pick and choose some spots with Billy Hamilton. I wrote something for the opening day section. It's one thing to do what he's done in spring, but when he stops getting those regular at-bats, it's a whole different thing.
Right.
That he's probably, well, he's really never done in his career, but I think maybe it was Friday night he came in late as kind of a replacement. And, you know, just hit a single into left, and he looked really good in that at-bat. I think that's the thing that he's going to have to be able to do, is come off the bench, get some big hits, hit some home runs, and it looks like they found something with him. Again, yeah, we'll see.
If you have Dominguez and Bosch on the bench, that's some pop off the bench. You know, last year they had Chris Heisey, but that was really it that could come out and give you that home run threat. And both of those guys are threats to hit the ball really long and far.
And it, you know, you got a left handed and right handed threat. And, you know, Dominguez is a guy, he's an interesting guy. I mean, he was a pretty big time prospect at one time. I think the question with him is, can he play defensively well enough to play every day?
Yeah.
But, you know, he looks like a pretty good find. They haven't set the roster yet. I asked Brian, again, it's Sunday, I asked Brian Price if they had told anyone they made the team, and he said no, which kind of surprised me. I thought,
especially with the trip to Montreal.
Yeah, I would have thought they told Bosch,
right?
Maybe Marquis.
We asked Marquis again afterwards, and he's like, no, you know, that's something they'll tell me. You guys will probably find out when I do.
Yeah, we're getting close to where they have to tell.
really do. I mean, contractually, they're going to have to tell Marquis or Mahomes, both of those guys, pretty soon. The other thing is, like, I guess we talked a little bit about this. The biggest questions going into camp, really, were the back of the rotation, and then maybe the back of the bullpen, or the bullpen.
We know who the ninth inning guy is, but beyond that, it's hard to say. I would lean towards it being Kevin Gregg, because when I asked Brian about it maybe a week ago, that was the first name he mentioned. He has a pretty good resume. He's thrown the ball well in camp. Jumbo Diaz has thrown it pretty well. Manny Parra has thrown it pretty well. So it's really hard to say. I don't know. Tony Cingrani's looked great since they moved him to the bullpen. So I think they have more options than they did maybe last year when they had Jonathan Broxton was out to begin with. And that's when things got a little hairy. When they didn't have Broxton, they didn't have Chapman. So they had to put these guys who weren't used to it in some tough situations. And they didn't do well to begin with.
And they didn't have many save situations early. So that didn't help. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, and I ask everybody on this thing about this, is about this division. It seems like it's such kind of a division up for grab, even though there is a clear favorite in the Cardinals. But people are going to get sick of hearing me say this throughout this podcast, because I think I said it to everybody. It's just like, I can see anybody except for maybe the Cubs finishing first. I think the Cubs have great talent. I just don't think they're there yet. I can see anybody but the Cubs finishing first. And I can see anybody but the Cardinals finishing last. And any other combination you can put out there.
With the division, I'd say I'd pick the Cardinals until proven otherwise. They have a good lineup. They added Hayward. They have their questions like everyone else, but they've just been so consistent, so good. The other teams, I think with the Pirates losing Russell Martin's a big deal, a really big deal. And you'll
see.
This
podcast is going to be a Russell Martin love fest, because that's what everybody else said too.
There's no way to underestimate how important he was, because they have a young staff. The Brewers are a team I can't figure out. You know, they were so good, and then they fade it. And the Cubs, they're an interesting team, but I'm with you. I think they're a year away. They've got so many young guys. They're fun to watch. They definitely swing hard and hope. But, you know, I just think when you're trying to put that many young guys in at one time, it usually right. doesn't work out. So yeah. We'll see.
I mean, I like Lester Arrieta. I mean, that's a really
yeah.
good one, too.
Yeah.
Arrieta was so good last year. And then John Lester's proven over time what he can do. So it's kind of, I mean, it's interesting what they have there. And, I mean, I can buy them winning it in 2016, but I'm not sure I'm 15 yet.
Yeah, it's, like I said, usually teams that have so many young guys in the everyday lineup, it just doesn't seem to click right away. But we'll see. I mean, they have so many different, with Joe Maddon coming in as a manager, bringing Lester in.
Whole Chris Bryant situation.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy, when he's on TV, they're watching it in the clubhouse right now because of
yeah.
the spring he's had. So they're just thick with prospects. I mean, they have so many really good prospects, but they're all kind of the same age. And we saw with them last year, they're talented, but are they ready to play in the major leagues?
Yeah, I mean, think about, it wasn't that long ago, and this does kind of lose its luster because they did go to the World Series last year, but, you know, we talked about the Royals and, you know, mm-hmm. Hosmer and Moustakas, those guys can't miss. And I still think Hosmer has a chance, but, you know, Moustakas is questionable. And, you know, so development is a weird thing.
Yeah. There's very few, everybody says can't miss, but a lot of guys miss. I think now more than ever, there's so much attention on the prospects with Baseball America, MLB, the minor league, one with
yeah.
stick the I after the M. Everybody knows about these guys before they get there, but they're called a prospect for a reason. It's one thing to have all the talent in the world, but you come up, you know, people have to remember, Jay Bruce was the number one prospect in baseball.
Right.
And Jay's had a good career, but it's not without bumps.
Right.
For almost everyone.
Well, you know, and I was talking to, for again, talking about our special section, which will be coming out Sunday the 5th? 5th, yeah. About getting an ace, and I was talking to Terry Reynolds. And he's talking about how, you know, Brian Taylor, that's a can't-miss guy.
Yeah.
You know, overall number one pick by the Yankees was at 89, 90, 91, around that era. And that was, he said he was Chapman. That's what he was. He just couldn't miss. And then Mark Pryor, you know,
mm-hmm.
couldn't miss. And Mark Pryor didn't miss for a little bit there, but things happen in this game.
Yeah.
And so
well, if you go back to 2006, no one would have picked Johnny Cueto over. If you had to give up one, they would have given up Johnny Cueto over Homer Bailey.
Right.
I mean, Johnny Cueto doesn't have that overwhelming fastball. He doesn't have that pitcher's body. You don't think he could be a starter and win 20 games, pitch 230 innings, do all these things, but he did. It's a bit of a crapshoot. I think you can look at prospects, you can look at what they can do, but they have to do it more than just have the talent.
Yeah, and I mean, you can go back to 2007. I mean, you would have taken Jay Bruce over Joey Votto.
Yeah. I don't think Joey Votto was ever higher than 30th on Baseball America's prospect list. I think, I'm going off of memory here, but I don't think he ever got higher.
He was never their number one prospect.
No.
So, and that's not to disparage, you know, the guys at Baseball America. They do an amazing job. It's just, it's an impossible job.
Well, I think the one thing that they really don't account for, or no one who projects accounts for, I did a big story on Cueto on how he got to where he is. And what he did was he figured it out intellectually. More so, he has the physical gifts. He throws hard enough. He can get up to 95. But he figured it out, how to basically outsmart hitters. He has six pitches. He has a cutter and a sinker, which break different ways off his fastball. He's developed himself. Votto, same thing. he made himself so much better by being a student of the game. It's one, you have to have a certain amount of talent to be a good or great player, but you also have to be able to improve yourself and figure it out. And those two guys in the Reds case have done it.
Right. I mean, look at a guy like, the Pirates coming in, Harrison. Josh Harrison was never
right.
a top prospect. And he's just been a player, you know. He had a hell of a season last year, Princeton's own. And we'll talk more about the Pirates, first with Bill Brink later on, but also at the second annual CDOT show opening day extravaganza. I think that's what I've called it. I'm really excited about that. We'll have Rob Beard-Temple from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Last year we had Derek Gould, who we'll be hearing from in a little bit. It was a lot of fun. You know, we went out to Motor. It'll be 6 o'clock on the 5th at Motor and Over the Rhine. John Fay will be there.
I'll be hosting if your flight gets screwed up.
Yes, because I am flying back from Montreal. So it'll be the CDOT show with your host, John Fay.
Yeah.
It probably improve things. So it should be a lot of fun. We did it last year. We had a blast. And you get to see John Fay up close and personal. Oh, get to see
boy, that's a thrill.
That is a thrill a minute. You know, like, you can like, maybe people can, like, heckle you, and you can heckle them back. Yeah. It'll be just like Twitter.
Yeah.
except you won't ignore as many as you do on the Twitter. So that should be fun. Come see us. And then stick around here. We're going to talk to first up, I guess. How should I do this? I think I might go in reverse order. So of the finish last year. We have Mark Gonzalez, who keeps his phone out of the toilet, which is a wise decision. That is why he is one of the deans of baseball writers in baseball, because he is such a wise man to keep his phone out of a toilet, unlike one Patrick Mooney. So Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to talk the Cubs. The Cubs are kind of the talk of baseball, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Never a dull moment around here. When you haven't won a World Series since the Dead Sea was sick, you can only sell hope.
Except, I mean, it seems like we've heard this stuff before, but this team, I'm kind of the doubter on this team, and I'm not doubting for 2016 and beyond. I think this team has a really bright future, but is 2015... too soon, or is the talk legit?
I think it's a little ambitious to talk about 2015 as a playoff contender. Stranger things have happened. You've seen it with a wild card, but I just think that too many things have to go right in order for them to earn a playoff berth in 2015. To 2016 and beyond, I think the pieces are really starting to crystallize and be in place for them to be a serious contender in this division and in the National League.
With that, I mean, and I think a lot of us saw this, is there are a lot of those pieces coming together. Did it surprise you when they went out and got John Lester? Because that's a 2015 move.
I didn't think so, because I kind of expected it. We heard rumblings when the Cubs went to Fenway Park last July, and then when the Cardinals were in town talking to a player in the Cardinals, he told me he thought it was going to be a slam dunk. Now, we all know that things can get a little crazy during free agency, and we saw that this winter, but I thought the Cubs definitely needed a frontline, bona fide number one starter who could eat up innings and was battle-tested in the playoffs, and I thought that Lester checked off on all the boxes, and I think they had the money to spend after you saw the rubbish they put out the previous years, trading veterans and trying to fill in the 4A guys.
And so, I mean, but you had, when you have Lester and Arrieta at the top, I mean, that's a really good one too. I mean, that's a 1-2 that any team in baseball is kind of looking at, maybe save the Nationals, but the Nationals still wouldn't spit on Lester, Arrieta 1-2.
Yeah. And the big thing too, is that they really didn't have a true pitcher on the staff in the rotation, aside from Travis Wood, that has pitched 200 innings in a season, and Lester's done it 6 in the last 7 years. There's a progression with Arrieta. He hasn't done it yet, but I think this year will be the year he can do it. Kyle Hendricks, if you combine his minor league innings fell about 15 innings short last year. He's capable of doing it. And Jason Hamill as well. So you have guys that are going to pitch deep. It all starts with Lester by giving him 200-plus quality innings.
I mean, that's and then five. Who is going to be five?
It looks like Travis Wood, although there's a scenario where they could have Edwin Jackson piggyback Wood. Certain starts or flip-flop them depending on the matchup. You know, they owe Edwin Jackson $22 million over the next 2 years, and they got to find a way to maximize his talents as well as make him attractive in some way to a team that needs pitching in the worst way, at least get something for him.
I mean, that's a really – I mean, if you have Wood, I mean, that's as good a five as I think anybody in the division, don't you?
Pretty close. You know, he was an all-star in 2013. The big thing is, it sounds funny, but he swings the bat pretty well. He has homers.
You don't have to tell Cincinnati people that. I mean, the guy can hit.
So,
he's like Mike Leake, but left-handed.
That's a good comparison. And also, the fact that Madden's going to bat the pitcher eighth in most games, with the exception of when Lester pitches, you really maximize the guy's skill as well as having a second leadoff guy bat ninth.
But I was thinking 1-5. That's a really good 1-5 rotation.
It's a lot better than it's been the last few years, and you know that, you know, four of these guys are going to be around here for a while, so it's a very good foundation.
We're recording this Monday. This is going out Tuesday, so this is all going to be pretty current. But the Chris Bryant thing, not a surprise to anybody. It was kind of a, when is this going to happen? And he's going to be down for 2 weeks and then be up. But is Chris Bryant the real deal? I mean, you've seen it all spring. Is it spring numbers or is it really, I mean, I guess everything?
He's got a chance to be very, very deluxe. And I say that because there's been a natural progression to his ascent through the minors. And I saw him. I was lucky enough to see him play as a sophomore at the University of San Diego. I was covering the White Sox. We had an off day in Anaheim. I stuck over at UC Riverside to watch him play as a sophomore. And he was special back then. And you saw him hit the ball, hit four long balls. One was a double, but he ran the bases well. I played third adequately. And you see him do the same thing up here with a little more convincing power to all fields. I mean, this guy's got power. He's got it to all fields. He's got a really good arm. So if they move him off third and put him in the outfield, he's going to hold his own out there.
Is there any doubt that 2 weeks into the season he's going to be up with the Cubs?
I would think there are many variables involved. I wouldn't be so convinced that he's going to be up here April 17th or 19th, whatever the date is. But I would think a lot has to depend on Mike Ault, how he gets off to a good start or not, and Chris just staying consistent down. I think if he more than holds his own and Ault's struggling, you could see Bryant up here no later than the third week. And it, obviously, we're looking at that week in April in Cincinnati. That's a possible target date.
And we all know what Cubs do when they do their debuts in Cincinnati.
Steve Jorge Soler.
Soler, remember
Starlin Castro
too. I mean, these guys, and we could have that here in Cincinnati on the 24th of April. That's kind of exciting to me. I mean, I really can't wait to see this guy as well. I mean, I didn't make the trip over to see you guys earlier, and then he wasn't on the split squad. So I mean, he's kind of the hands-down rookie of the year already, right?
Well, him, you know, funny as it sounds, it was Soler qualifies a rookie too. But, I mean, you've got two guys that have some monster skills that if they can put it together, it's pretty scary.
You know, the guy I really like every time I see the Cubs recently is Alcantara, and nobody seems to talk about him.
He's a guy that Joe Maddon called a beautiful man because he can play six positions. And you remember when he played second base in his major league debut, turning that double play and showed great fearlessness just catching the ball as he came across the bag and threw the first. But he's a super utility guy, and he switch hits. He can be a Sean Figgins in his prime type guy because of his ability. He's got sneaky power. I mean, this guy –
yeah,
cut pretty well, and he could probably hit 15 homers when he becomes a true major leaguer, doesn't chase that low inside curve from the left side, and his defense is superb. You know, he didn't play the outfield until last June in the minors, and he's done very, very well out there considering how tough Wrigley can be.
Yeah. Has there been anybody that's kind of surprised you this spring?
As it relates to the position players and all that, Tommy La Stella is a guy they point to. Is there a type of guy they want their hitters to become more of a guy who puts the ball in play, compact swing, cuts down strikeouts, doesn't strike out much, hits the all fields, a guy that hits the ball where it's pitched, a nice compact guy. He's really impressed them at third base. He never played third base in his professional career, not since played for, I believe, born in the Cape Cod League, going back to, I think, 2009 or 10. But he's a hitter that the Cubs want a lot of their guys to become a contact guy because these guys still strike out a lot. They set a franchise record last year with more than 1,400 strikeouts, and they want their guys to cut down on their strikeout rate and put the ball in play like the way La Stella does. You can do so many things when you put the ball in play like La Stella does.
Yeah. And then lastly, I just kind of want to touch on this division. I've asked everybody in this division about this, and it seems like the consensus is anything could happen. What do you see in this division?
I'm not so convinced only because Waka's going to be healthy. I think he might be the difference maker. You know, Wainwright's starting to get a lot of miles and a little aches and all that, but it seems like the Cardinals don't rebuild. They retool. You know, Marco Gonzalez is going to help them this year. Carlos Martinez, now the number five guy in the rotation. It just seems like they've been the kings of the division, you know, now with the Reds stepping back a bit. But I think that it's still the Cardinals' division. They always find a way to break guys in at the right time. I know the Pirates are going to be formidable as well. I expect Gerrit Cole to have a pretty big year, but I think they're going to feel the loss of Russell Martin as well. So I still think it's the Cardinals are, I won't say prohibitive favorite, but they're a strong favorite to win this division.
Yeah, what I keep saying is I can see anybody but the Cardinals finishing last and probably anybody but the Cubs finishing first. And in any other order for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I can see that assessment. I just think too many things have to happen for the Cubs to challenge. The Pirates are still going to be there with their pitching, you know, in the bullpen, the solid defense. Interesting year for the Reds. It could go either way. I mean, they could really have rebound years, or they might have to start moving more pitching to get younger. The Brewers, I just thought the first 150 games was kind of an anomaly last year, and so they're at a crossroads right now.
I mean, the smart money's on the Cardinals.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Even the dumb money is on the Cardinals, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I just feel very strongly about that. Always find a way.
But, I mean, you could. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility you get one wild card team out of this division. And it just seems like it'd be tough to get two because 90 wins are going to be tough to get out of here.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. My over-under on the Cubs' victories is 82. I've been firm with it. I mean, even though they added Dexter Fowler late in the winter, there's still some defensive challenges for the rest of this team. It's a growing period still. So you got to take some hits along the way. But I think that a 9-game improvement from last year is a sign of progress for these guys.
Well, and it'd be a real shame if they went to the World Series and there was no outfield bleachers.
Well, you said anything can happen in this division. That applies to Wrigley Field.
So a meteor could hit it and wipe it out and put us all out of our misery?
Well, I just, you know, it's like having, you go to somebody's house, they have a big TV set but no furniture. That's the kind of way I feel about Wrigley without the bleachers.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy. I like it. And bad food.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Which is most important to me, as you know.
And the wireless. The wireless has got to work as well.
Oh, God. Don't even. Yeah. I somehow missed Wrigley all last year. and we were kind of doing our travel today, and John's just like, I have to get you to Chicago, and it's like, I'm missing the first one, so we'll see. But, well, Mark, I really appreciate your time. I know it was a busy day for you with the big Bryant affair going down. I'm sure you had that story written already, though. The veteran you are, it was already written and ready to go because
no,
it didn't really surprise anybody.
Didn't surprise anybody, but I think the suddenness of it kind of surprised everybody that they did it, you know, the Monday before. I figured it'd be Wednesday or Thursday before. I did have the Lester story all written before I made his announcement.
Well, that's good. That's because that's another reason you're the best in the business. Mark, thank you so much, and I will see you in Cincinnati for Chris Bryant's debut when he hits, I guess, what, four homers on the 24th of April at Great American Ballpark.
I don't know if he's going to hit four. Maybe he'll hit one to the Montgomery and Boathouse.
If he hits four, I think there will be some Cubs fans who are disappointed.
I agree with you. Totally. Totally. I mean,
why didn't he have six? Well, he only came up to bat three times. Well, he still should have had six. Thank you so much, Mark. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
You too, man.
So we're continuing our trip around the NL Central with my old buddy Todd Rosiak. We go back a long ways to little Big East basketball. Conference USA basketball?
Yeah, Conference USA, Huggy Bear. That's yeah. Right, long time.
So you're a former Marquette beat writer, but how long have you been doing the Brewers now?
This is my fifth year.
Fifth year.
So I've seen a little bit of everything. My first year, 2011, they finished a couple games short of the World Series, and we had horrible seasons in between. They had a decent season last year. Obviously, they tanked it in the end, as a lot of Brewer fans are well aware. So it's just been an interesting run for sure, and definitely different than covering college athletics.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, dealing with adults and people who treat you like adults.
Imagine that, right?
For good or bad.
Yeah.
So yeah. So okay, last year the Brewers. Who were they? Were they the team that led for the whole year, or were they the team that collapsed?
That's a great question. We're still trying to figure that out. The Brewers clearly think that they're the team that led the division for the first 150 days, because they really didn't make many changes. You get Adam Lind in that trade in the offseason for Marco Estrada. They traded Giovanni Gallardo heading into spring training.
Picked did that surprise up
a,
you?
It did. It did, but to a degree. They small market teams, cost certainty, that sort of thing. They weren't going to be able to re-sign them at the end of the year. So right. They got a couple of nice young pieces that they'll be able to plug in. Luis Sardinas, utility infielder, and Corey Knebel, a reliever. And then the wild card in the whole deal is a 17-year-old kid, pitcher Diplon, Marcos Diplon, who's supposed to have a really high upside. So if he pans out, it'll be a good trade for him. But yeah, it's a calculated risk. They're going to be starting Mike Fiers and Jimmy Nelson fourth and fifth in the rotation. But beyond that, it's the same, really the same cast of characters that's coming back, and they put their heads together at the end of the season. Doug Melvin joked with us a couple of weeks ago that, you know, how they always give us the 10-minute cooling off period after a game. They needed like a 3-week cooling off period, the management and everybody, before they got together and really discussed what went wrong. But it was they decided it was an offensive breakdown. Really, Ryan Braun with the thumb thing never got better. Ramos Ramirez had leg problems and just never bounced back to form. And when you don't have your 3 and 4 hitters, that just cripples an offense. Doesn't matter how deep it is, you know?
I think we kind of saw that in Cincinnati.
Yeah. You know exactly what that is.
But the other thing is, though, I mean, there are other guys that could – the last thing I worry about with the Brewers is them hitting the ball. I mean, I guess they did go in that funk at the end of the year, but, you know, that lineup, that should be enough to overcome a pedestrian kind of pitching staff.
You would think, you know, there were other issues too. Another issue that the fans get enraged about is it's a lineup of, for the most part, very impatient hitters, very aggressive hitters, guys that will swing at the first pitch if it's over their head or in the dirt. And they don't understand why, you know, Ron Renicki doesn't say, Carlos Gomez, you know, stop doing that. Well, Carlos Gomez has finally tapped into his potential because they've let him come, you know, do what comes naturally to him and let him be aggressive. You know, he was, when they traded for him, the managers, he told us, you know, he had managers who just kept telling him, hit the ball on the ground, you're fast, you know, bump the ball, get on base. Well, Carlos Gomez is a really scary leadoff hitter. You know, he did it the other day. We've seen it. We saw it many times last season. But first pitch, the pitchers cannot get me over first pitch fastball. That guy, he's gonna crush it. So, you know, they have talent in other spots other than those three and four hitters, Braun and Ramirez. But you know, you throw in a guy like Gene Segura who struggled big time last year.
That was huge to me.
Yeah, so you had a bunch of guys who just were not clicking together, and that was the net result, was averaging whatever it was, 2.3 or 2.4 runs a game over the last 6 weeks. And obviously, hey Dick, obviously you can't sustain a any kind of winning with those kind of numbers.
The one thing with them that always gets me, when was the last time they had a decent bullpen?
You know what? Their bullpen actually hasn't been too bad. 2 years ago, it was pretty darn good. But I would say their best bullpen since I've been on the beat was the year that they won Division 2011. You had Axford, who was money then, and then they made that trade for K-Rod when K-Rod was still good, but he had more juice in his arm. So you had the eighth and the ninth pretty much locked down, and then they had the seventh inning covered by LaTroy Hawkins and Takashi Saito, if you remember him.
Yeah, I remember talking to him after the loss.
Yeah, so after, you know, if they were leading the game after six innings, they were winning the game. You know, and again, you guys know all about terrific closers and what value they have. But that's, I would say, 2011, since I've been on the beat, that was unquestionably the best one.
I forgot about Saito that year.
Yeah, he was good.
He was really good, and he let me practice my Japanese. So... is K-Rod the closer?
Yes, he is. And let's see, he's got two appearances, I think, under his belt so far. He's supposed to pitch tonight. You know, we were joking with him the other day. I'm sure a lot of people remember the funny spring training injuries and everything. You know, him stepping on the cactus last year. And he, you know, imagine that, stepping on a barefooted on a cactus and having like 1,000 spines in the bottom of your foot. We all know how sensitive an area that is. And he came back and pitched 4 days later after doing that.
Wow.
And he showed us his foot on numerous occasions because we would always ask how it was doing. He'd say, look, and he'd pull his sock off and stick it out. And I mean, it just looked horrible. It looked like raw hamburger. And to be able to put any weight on that thing, let alone pitch, because that was the foot that he landed on, was amazing. But this year, you know, they brought him in late, obviously. He reported late, I should say. But he's lined up as a closer. Guy you guys know well, Broxton will be the setup guy. And they've got some other arms behind them in the seventh inning that the Brewers are intrigued by. Jeremy Jeffress is one guy. Potential closer in the future. Possibly Will Smith, the lefty. So they've got some pretty good arms down there. But K-Rod is definitely the guy in the ninth, with Broxton in reserve, if you want to call it that, in case he falters.
Jonathan Lucroy took that step last year. I think a lot of people, he was like that underrated guy until last year. And then last year, it just exploded. Was this something you saw coming? Everybody kind of saw coming that he was your little secret there for a while?
Yeah. It's been interesting to kind of watch his evolution. He's just a guy, he's like a perfect Milwaukee guy to me. Blue collar, doesn't really say much, you know, keeps his nose the grindstone, does anything for the team. You know, this is a guy that in 2013, when they were having all kinds of problems with first base. What's up, Jamie? Good to see you, man.
Jamie Ramsey screwing up everything again. Always, yeah.
It's all good.
Can't do anything with that guy around.
what was I talking
Lucroy.
About? Oh, yeah, Lucroy. In 2013, when they cycled through 8 different first basemen, he volunteered to play first base just because he knew that was the best way for them to get a bat in the lineup. Maldonado would catch. So he's just a team first guy, and he definitely took that next step last year. you know, his receiving is tremendous.
Well, yeah.
Offensively, he's really good, obviously. We talked to him today, actually, about his pitch framing, and that's a big thing that seam heads are really – and he's the cream of the crop when it comes to that stuff. So, a lot of – he has does all the little things and a good guy in the clubhouse, too. So, it's going to be interesting to see what he does this year because I think the kind of the perception in the club – around the club is that – you know, he's a guy that wants to play every day, and it's tough to play every day when you're a catcher. You know,
right. He's supposed to play more first, right?
Yeah. He's supposed to play more, a little bit more first this year with Adam Lind's bulky back. You know, his back kind of acts up, and he needs days off, and also the fact that he doesn't hit left-handed pitching particularly well, Lind. So rather than going out and get a guy that you can platoon at first base or a right-handed bat that you could play there sometimes, they'll just slide him over there and then play Maldonado at catcher. So. Pretty much the guy is, you know, the face of the franchise at this point. And for us, selfishly, just a tremendous guy to work with, really good dude.
That's crazy to see. I mean, you know, they have Ryan Braun there, a guy who was an MVP not that long ago.
Yeah.
We don't have to go through all that again.
Yeah.
But is that, is he still a question mark? I mean, after last season, I mean, I kind of look, you look at his numbers, are kind of like Jay Bruce was last year.
Yeah, he's, definitely a question mark. I mean, to me, he's the number one key to this team this year. If they do well, it's going to be because he goes back to his 2012 form. You know, I'm not saying he's got to hit 315 with 40 home runs, but he's got to hit 300. He's got to hit 30 home runs. He's got to drive in 100 runs. He's got to go back to being the Ryan Braun of old. And to this point, he's reported no issues with the thumb in the spring. He's cut down on his excess swinging. He's never been a guy who's needed a lot of work in the spring anyway. He's a guy who really kind of ramps up his stuff as he goes along, and then he's ready for the season. So to this point, you know, everybody was all up in arms because I think he was old for his first 11 or something like that, and he got his first hit, and we were standing in the clubhouse, and he comes in, and he says, "The streak is over! The national nightmare is over!" You know, joking, of course.
Yeah.
So he's got a good sense of humor about it, but you know, so far so good with that thumb, and if it can hold up, that's going to be huge for these guys because again, it's tough to field a representative lineup when your best hitter is not 100% or close to it.
Hi, Dan.
Dan, how are you, sir?
Good.
Nice
good
to see you.
Oh.
You know where Doug went? Which direction? He went that away.
About 5 minutes ago, that way. Him and Gord.
I suspect they found their destination by now. They were wandering the hall. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, you're fine. We are in the hallway, of course, here to Goodyear Ballpark. That was former Reds general manager Dan O'Brien.
Want to go online?
No, thank you.
All right. Come on.
Any surprises this spring?
Boy. Just trying to think in my head. One pleasant surprise to these guys has been the way Gene Segura's rebounded. You know, he was a real question mark coming into the season or coming into the spring. Just nightmarish year last year for him. He started off, they offered him $38 million last spring, and he turned it down because his agent thought that he deserved Andrelton Simmons type money, and he went out and had a horrible year. Had terrible personal tragedy with his infant son passing away the All-Star break, and just those two things combined with just regression on the field, impatience at the plate, just it's about as bad a year as any guy can have. So this spring he comes in having made some slight tweaks to his stance, keeping his hands back a little bit more. When he was really good, when he made the All-Star game in 2013, he was a guy who was hitting the ball to the gaps, hitting the ball to right center, beating out a ton of infield hits, and we're seeing that this spring. So I know that they're really encouraged by that. And again, it's another guy who's going to be really key for them moving forward. Scooter Jeanette at second base. This will be his first year that they're not going to be platooning him, so he's kind of the guy at second base. I don't even know if I'd call him a surprise, but he's lived up to the billing. You know, he's done nothing this spring to show them that he can't be the guy every day. The big question was with him was whether he'd be able to hit left-handed pitching, and he's been able to do that so far. So those are two guys that to me really, really kind of stood out this spring for him.
What are you seeing in this division?
Interesting question. I was just poring over some of the teams and the stats and everything last night for our opening day section. And it's going to be very competitive, I think. You know, obviously, till somebody knocks them off, it's going to be the Cardinals, in my opinion. But they gave up some pretty decent pitching to get Jason Hayward in the offseason. I think the loss of Russell Martin for the Pirates is going to be really big. You know, I think people maybe will overlook that, but that guy was unbelievable in so many ways for them.
Last year, I thought he was the MVP of that team.
I don't disagree with you at all.
I think I had him in my top 10 on my ballot.
Yeah, I did too. He was really, really good. And just everything that he did. So that the loss of him is going to be big for them. To me, it's almost like, which team lost the least in the division? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
the Cardinals
added
Hayward, but they lost some. Pirates lost some. You know, your guys lost some. The Brewers made that trade, got rid of Gallardo. I guess the Cubs would be the team that really added, but I don't subscribe to this. Yeah, and I don't subscribe to this theory that, you know, they're all of a sudden they're favorites for the World Series or whatever. They're still very young at a number of key positions. Their pitching is suspect, although they did add John Lester. They'll be much improved, I think, but I don't see them really contending at this point. You know,
I've said I can see any team except for maybe the Cubs finishing first.
Everything has to go right. Stay healthy and that sort of
any
thing.
Any team
right.
other than the Cubs finishing first, and any team but the Cardinals finishing last.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. It's going to be interesting. This has been one of the most fascinating divisions in baseball for going on 4 years now.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't see that changing this year.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Todd. I appreciate it.
Anytime, C. Trent. My pleasure. Honored to be on, finally.
Finally.
Going around the NL Central and the two-time wild card participant, the Pittsburgh Pirates, Bill Brink of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Bill, does that still sound weird that they've been in the playoffs the last 2 years?
Two-time playoff Pirates. It's a little strange, especially considering, you know, where they came from in 2010. Yeah, it's weird to hear.
What was your first year on the beat?
My first year as a full-time guy on the beat was in 2011. So I took over midway through that season. So I guess 2011, 2012 was my first full year.
Okay. So you were the spark they needed?
That's what they tell me. That's when you talk to Hurdle and Huntington, and that's what they say is, you know, once we got Brink in the press box, you know, we just started seeing the ball a little better, and you know, things just went from there.
Well, and this is you're arbitration eligible, so you got a big bump, right?
That's what I tried to tell my editors. They weren't having it.
Huh. All right. Well, what's new in spring with the Pirates? I mean, the thing with them, it seems like, okay, here let me ask a different question. How big a difference does it make that Russell Martin isn't there?
It's a big difference, and it's one that, I mean, obviously his offensive numbers speak for themselves. Last year he was very strong at the plate, but what you really aren't going to be able to see until the season gets going, and it's going to be subtle, is his impact on the pitchers, whether it was blocking balls in dirt with a runner on third so that Francisco Liriano could bury his slider, or whether it was kind of helping Garrett Cole out there when he got really amped up, and you know, he's a feisty guy and he likes to strike everybody out, so we can kind of calm him down or frame it a pitch here and there. It's going to add up over the course of the season. Now, that's not to say that Francisco Cervelli can't do a good job, and by all indications thus far, he's really learning the staff well and he's getting rave reviews from his pitchers. But yeah, those are the things they're going to miss, the little tweaks here and there, blocking a ball. The caught stealing percentage, you know, they're probably going to get run on a little bit more this year. So the difference in camp, I think, you know, it's a learning process, obviously, for Cervelli, but I don't think that the difference is really going to make itself apparent until you get into the season a little bit.
Because last year, you know, they had two guys who were, I think, in the top 10 in the MVP, in McCutcheon and Harrison. And I mean, both guys very deserving, but for some reason, I just kept going back. It's like, I think Russell Martin's the MVP of that team.
And that's an argument that we had, you know, some of the writers in Pittsburgh and discussions we had with Clint Hurdle. And I came very close to putting Martin on my MVP ballot, and I, in retrospect, probably should have.
I think he was on mine.
Yeah, he was on several. I think he finished 13th. That sounds right.
Yeah.
I mean, I came very close to it. You know, it's tough for a team with Andrew McCutchen to say that, you know, Russell Martin's going to be, but the point, I think the point is a good point. I think that he was just that important to what they were doing, offensively and defensively.
Yeah, I mean, and it was a tough ballot last year for that, and I kind of, then you also look at what, you know, Josh Harrison did. It was crazy. They had three guys that were really worthy candidates to me, so, yeah, it's just kind of interesting to me that that this is the one that got away. But, again, he's just a guy they couldn't afford at those prices, was he?
Yeah, I mean, 5 and 82 is a lot of money for a franchise with the Pirates' revenue, with their TV deal, with their just their finances. That's and the other thing too is when you look at his final year of that deal, he would have been, I believe, 36 years old with a full no trade clause because he would have had 10 and 5 rights at that point.
Right.
And they've got some young catchers who, by that point, whether it's Tony Sanchez, whether it's Reese McGuire, whether it's Elias Diaz, whoever it was, they were going to have somebody else that they were going to want to play. And when you've got a guy making, I think if I remember correctly, he's making $20 million in the final year of that deal, a 36-year-old catcher making $20 million with a full no-trade clause, that's really difficult to kind of navigate when your payroll is only was going to be $90 million this year, so who knows what it will be in 5 years, say $100 million. That's still 20% of your payroll. That's really tough to kind of construct a team around.
And that's something the Pirates have been so good at doing. I mean, their payroll's still relatively very low, and that's a pretty bright front office, and they're not going to leverage that for the short term game, it seems.
No, exactly. And they realize what they're going to lose on the field with Martin. They realize what they're going to lose in the clubhouse, and they know they were going to take a hit from the fans who think that they should have paid him, or some of the fans. But it was funny, the reaction I get a lot from, you know, whether it's Twitter or email from fans when the Pirates do or don't sign somebody is, oh, they're cheap, they're not paying enough. In this case, I didn't get a whole lot of that. And that, not that, you know, my inbox is necessarily representative of the fan base, but it was just they kind of realized, like, okay, 5 years and $82 million is a lot of money, and the Pirates were probably wise in not going to that point.
Yeah. One of the worst places they did spend the money is on Kang. I mean, they didn't spend a whole lot relatively, but what have you seen from Kang this spring?
Well, he's gone through a little bit of a slump that's gotten some attention in the last week or so, but this is his first foray into American professional baseball, and so I don't think that slumps are necessarily indicative of, oh, he can't handle it, or what he did in Korea was a fluke. I mean, he had 40 home runs and 356 last year in the KBO, and I understand that that's more of an offense-heavy league, and I can't claim to have seen any KBO games or gone to any of the stadiums. Maybe they're smaller, but you don't hit 40 home runs just as a, you know, you don't luck your way into 40 home runs or hitting 356. I mean, he's a talented guy, and he's got, when you look at him, he doesn't look like somebody who would hit for a lot of power, but when you watch him swing, he's got a lot of leverage. His hips and his legs really work well. He can drive the ball to the opposite field. He's got quick hands in the infield. I think he's still learning. Not necessarily, I'm sure he knows the coverage plays. They're probably a little different from team to team, but he's still learning the communication on where he needs to be and when. And that's part of the language barrier. So it's tough to tell with Springs so far, but I think that for the money they paid, 4 years and $11 million, that's not a lot of money in today's, plus the $5 million posting fee. That's not a lot of money in today's baseball economics. So.
Yeah.
To take the risk on a guy like that, I mean, I think that's a chance they were willing to take.
Is he going to be in the lineup when we see you on the, what, 6th?
On the 6th. No, he will be on the active roster. They've said multiple times that they're not going to send him down. He's going to make the Major League roster. And I think their reasoning behind that is he can probably, in their estimation, he can probably rake against Triple-A pitching. That's not necessarily what he needs to work on. They need him to see major league pitching, major league velocity, major league breaking pitches. And so, and the only way for him to do that is going to be, you know, at the major league level. So they're going to start him on the active roster. They're working him at shortstop, which is his primary position, and then third base and second to kind of make him a utility infielder of sorts. And they're going to work him in probably a start here, a start there. If he plays really well and gets to the point where they want to play him over Jordy Mercer, I think we're a little ways from that, but they won't hesitate to. But I think they're going to work him in as a bench guy, get him, I don't know, 250 plate appearances this year and see how it goes.
It's kind of a fascinating thing because this is a true, like, this is groundbreaking because, you know, we've had guys from Korea like Shin-Soo Chu who've been very good, but, you know, Shin-Soo Chu came up through the minors, you know, this is the Ichiro jump, really. We've had pitchers, but we haven't had an everyday guy come from the KBO to Major League Baseball. So it's kind of like the Korean version of Ichiro to me.
Yeah, this is uncharted territory. This has literally never been done before. Got a guy coming over who was a star over there. He was very good for several years and has, I think it's 9 years of experience at some level of Korean professional baseball. So you're talking about a guy who has a track record. This isn't, you know, a young guy coming up through the minors. This isn't a pitcher. It's completely uncharted, and there's, you know, the Pirates have told us they have rough statistical models to kind of adjust for KBO production to Major League production and combine that with the scouting reports they've gotten. And they've got an idea, but nobody really knows what he's going to be able to do. Even him, we asked him how do you think it's going to translate? He said, I'm asking the same question as you guys are. I don't know.
We've seen Japanese shortstops, and it's, I don't think it's fair to really, just because they're both Asian, to make that comparison, but it seems like none of the Japanese shortstops have, not only hitting, but fielding haven't been able to match up. Can he play shortstop in the big leagues?
I think that's going to be the question more so than the hitting. I think eventually he will hit. Now, whether it takes a month or two or a season to adjust, you know, that we'll see, but I think he will hit. I'm not a scout, but in talking to scouts and watching him play, in reading some of the scouting reports, Baseball America did some great work on him when he was going through the posting process. There are some questions about whether he can play shortstop at the major leagues every day. And you watch him, he's got pretty quick hands. I think the issue is the throwing, the routine play, turning double plays, that type of thing. So I think the capability is there for him to do it. I would not, having seen a very small snapshot, I would not rule it out. But the fact that scouts are questioning it, I think that's something he might have to prove. And I think they're going to – that's his most comfortable position. He's only played third base, I think, in the 2010 Asian Games. He was a catcher coming up in high school. This spring is his first experience at second base. So they're really taking it pretty slow with him so as not to overwhelm him. I think he can do it. I don't know necessarily that he can do it at the level they want for an everyday shortstop.
All right. What kind of surprise – has there been anybody surprising in camp? Any surprises, either positive or negative, you've seen so far?
Tony Sanchez has been a bit of a surprise. He was the Pirates' first-round pick in 2009. He was supposedly their catcher of the future. He's had a couple tough years, both offensively. He got hit in the face twice and broke his jaw. And so anytime you come back from that, it's tough to really get a groove back offensively. But then he's always been a strong defensive catcher until the last year or two when he's really had some troubles throwing. Even, you know, strike three in the dirt, you got to throw down to first base. He's thrown some of those in the right field. So he went down to winter ball this year. He actually got sent home early because he was hitting so poorly, but he said that was the point. He was working himself into deep counts, into two-strike counts to work on his two-strike approach, and he says he feels very confident with his defense that he played down there. This spring, you know, obviously spring training stats are taken, you know, with a grain of salt, but he's hitting very well. He's got two or three home runs thus far. He's throwing well. He's thrown out a couple base runners. It just seems like a different guy, more the guy I think they thought they were going to get. So they still have Francisco Cervelli and Chris Stewart at catcher, but Sanchez is a guy I think who's surprised me definitely, and I think he's opened the eyes of the coaching staff a little bit too.
All right. Well, and then finally, I just kind of want to – I've asked everybody about this because this division is so fascinating. What do you see in this division?
You know, I had to turn in my division preview a couple days ago, and I'm still wrestling with the order. I still think the Cardinals probably have the best chance to win the division just because of the overall strength of that team and the pitching staff in particular. I think the Reds, I know you know better than I do, but I think they're a fascinating team because if you get Joey Votto and Jay Bruce healthy and get that offense kind of cranking again, that's a dangerous lineup, especially if Mesoraco and Frazier do what they do. I'm not sure about the Cubs. Obviously, a ton of talented young hitters. I'd like to see Javier Baez strike out less than 40% of the time before I get too excited what they're going to do. the Reds, to me, are the wild card. I think the Pirates and Cardinals are probably competing for the top two spots. The Brewers, I don't know, they got some good guys still. I think Gene Segura can't possibly be as bad as he was last year. but they didn't really do much to get better. So I think the Reds and the Cubs can really make some strides if things work out. If Votto and Bruce produce, if Homer Bailey stays healthy, if the young guys, you know, do well, I think they're probably competing for 2, 3, 4. And I think it's kind of a wait and see for me on the Brewers, because I just don't know that they got all that much better. So I don't know if that really gives much of a snapshot of what I think. But I think you're right, there's a lot of uncertainty in the division.
Well, I'm talking to somebody from everybody in the division. And I'm a Cubs skeptic. Todd Rosiak of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is a Cubs skeptic. Derek Gould's all in with the Cubs. And I haven't talked to Patrick Mooney yet. So... as we're recording this, so it's kind of interesting. I think the Cubs are the interesting one. And anybody listening to this is going to get tired of hearing me say this, but the way I see it is, like, I can see anybody but maybe the Cubs finishing first and second in this division, and I can see anybody but maybe the Cardinals finishing last.
I would agree with that. I think you could see. I don't know if this is how it'll play out, but I think you could see the winner of this division win 88 games.
Yeah.
And the last place guy win 80 or 81. Yeah. They could just beat up on each other all season, especially in the second half, as maybe the Cubs get Brian up, you know, they get some of the guys maybe round into form. So I agree.
90 wins are going to be tough to come by in this division.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the Cardinals only won with 91 last year, right? And that was with a much less dangerous Cubs.
Right. So it's kind of interesting. Bill, we will see you on opening day. Thanks so much for your time, and we really appreciate it. I really appreciate it, and I will see you on opening day.
I'm looking forward to April 6th. Thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Bill. I'm with Derek Gould, who is somewhere in the middle of Florida driving at the moment. Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. For my money, the best beat writer in the country. And I don't say that.
Well, you're just buttering me up now.
I am not buttering you up. And this is a two-time CDOT show guest.
Yes, I have the pint glass to prove it. I'm very proud to have that in my collection of pint glasses, along with I have the CDOT show pint glass. I have a old Tiger Stadium with the Michigan and Trumbull street signs on it, pint glass, and then an array of beer pint glasses and comic book character. So you fit right in.
Yeah, right there. One of the evil ones. So
it's a favorite.
Well, good. Hopefully it doesn't scare your lovely wife.
No, she's good with it. She doesn't use it, but she's good with it.
That's a smart woman.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking on Saturday night, and this is going to come out Tuesday, but you guys had big news today.
Where do you want to start?
Well, let's just start with this rotation. I mean, this was kind of there's been kind of questions about the rotation. If there is I don't even know if it's a chink in the Cardinals' armor, but it's certainly in there. There are certainly questions. What's the rotation looking like?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, it's sort of what they should have come to expect by now. Just about a few days after they make it pretty clear that they're going to go with Jaime Garcia as the fifth starter, Jaime Garcia is available to be the fifth starter. He, on the eve of what should have been his, you know, affirming start, the one that maybe even after the game they said, hey, Jaime's back in the rotation. I'm very thrilled that he's back, and he's come back from shoulder surgery and all this stuff. Instead, now they've kind of throttled back on him. He had some fatigue, some discomfort of some type, weakness maybe is a way to describe it, in the biceps shoulder area. So now they've scaled back, and the focus has shifted to the guys who the Cardinals expected to duke it out for the fifth starter spot all along, which is Carlos Martinez and Marco Gonzalez. I mean, it just the whole arc of this conversation has been fascinating because, you know, they trade Shelby Miller and they present, you know, Carlos Martinez and Marco Gonzalez as the guys who will compete for the starting job. They spend most of the winter building up Carlos Martinez to be the starter and fending off teams interested in trading for Carlos Martinez, only to get to spring to go, hey, wait a minute, this $9.5 million lefty that we had, he's healthy, and he's throwing well, so what do we do with that? And then, you know, a week to go, and now Jaime isn't healthy, or at least they don't quite know where his health is. But they kept Carlos, and they kept Marco, you know, riding along, you know, humming along as starter candidates, and now it really becomes, you know, this duel if the Cardinals decide to go with a fifth starter at all, which they might not, and that would influence your guys or that first series there in Cincinnati because it would set up a Wainwright marquee, I think, game for the opener. Or Iglesias. Well, for the story purposes, let's root for a Wainwright versus marquee.
Okay. And that's what we always root for.
Right, because they came over to the Cardinals in the same trade.
That's
which
right.
was pulled off by your all's general manager. So it would make for a really good story to write. And I have an off-day story to come up with, so that's what I'm hoping. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But,
I'm not. I'm not. Hell no.
Yeah.
I need an easy story.
But that's where they're at.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where they're at with the fifth starter. And you say, like, there's a weakness. And I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a serious question as to the innings here. You know, Waka has been really strong and pretty much get away early with any questions about him. But, you know, again, he's got to get 10, 20 starts into a season, you know, before you go, oh, okay, yeah, this is a guy who can be the every fifth day starter. He hasn't done that before. So there's questions there. Lackey is what Lackey is. Wainwright is healthy and ready to go. And Lance Lynn is what Lance Lynn is. Yeah, so that's sort of where it is. It's four pretty good starters. It could be three exceptional starters and one guy who would be a number two on a lot of teams. And then this fifth starter thing. So, you know, I mean, they're good. The question is where are innings going to come from? And now the immediate question is who's going to be the fifth starter.
Right. Huh. Again, though, I mean, we go back into it, and we spend so much time, especially in spring, wringing our hands about fifth starters. How much does a fifth starter really matter?
Well, that's a good question. But I think in this day of hyper-specialized bullpens, you're starting to see a fifth starter mean a little bit more as far as maintaining, as far as being a contender. So, you know, I look back last year, and what did the Brewers have that every other team was searching for? I mean, they had a rotation that was cranking out quality starts.
Right.
And they weren't, you know, they weren't having leads, you know, evaporate in late innings because all the relievers would stand in their lane.
That was the difference between them and the Reds. The Reds had quality starts, and then they would just be gone with
Well, but how many quality starts did Homer Bailey give? You know, I mean, how many quality starts? I mean, how many? Look at it this way, okay? Of your five starters with the Reds, how many could you bank on giving a quality start every time out? Was it three? Was it four?
I think so. I mean, well, let's see. You had Cueto, certainly.
Done. Ace. Yeah, Cueto's an ace.
First half of the season, Simon was doing it.
Right. Cingrani did it against the Cardinals.
And that was the only time he did it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they had five guys, but you're right. They didn't have – they had five names.
Right. They had five names. You know, five guys, two of whom would go five innings, maybe. Two of whom would go six innings but give up four runs, maybe. I mean, this is the thing is if you want to stay in contention, you got to have four guys giving you a chance to win because otherwise you're leaving yourself exposed in a series to lose two of those games. Right. And the ripple effect of the bullpen now, because, again, we're in such a hyper-specialized era, the ripple effect of the bullpen maybe leaves you exposed in that third game and you're swept.
Yeah.
And we saw with the Cardinals in July. I mean, they had to go out and get started. You know, I mean, I kept trying to write and, you know, let people know, you know, that an innings crisis was on the horizon. I mean, they were going along, but they were not going to be able to get to September before they absolutely had to get more innings from someone, somehow, some way. with walk-on the DL, and they had to make that trade. And you look at, okay, the Brewers in first place for 150 days, when did things start going awry for them? All of a sudden, those starters, they weren't doing the quality starts. They weren't stringing together, you know, a complete rotation where they were just giving their offense a chance to win. And everything kind of unfolded rapidly on them. And the Cardinals took off in September when, oh, by the way, Wainwright went 5-0. John Lackey went 6 innings in every start, but the one he was ejected from there in Cincinnati. Lance Lynn was a beast. And there's your three guys, and off you go.
Yeah. Well, how's Jason Hayward fitting in?
Quite well. You mean with the media, of course?
Yeah, that's all that wonderful. Really matters.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's you know what? He's I will use the line that Matt Carpenter told me. It's like he's a clone of what we have going on here in the clubhouse. He kind of knew it going in, right? I mean, they make that trade. I heard about that trade at the GM meetings and wrote a little bit about the possibility of that trade. And it's like, well, of course they're going to do this. It just was a matter of what it was going to cost. But, I mean, Hayward just fits their MO so, you know, fine. I mean, perfectly. I mean, he's a good, reliable defensive player, upside offensively. At 25 years old, is still entering his prime, still kind of defining himself as a hitter. Not quite sure what he is as a hitter. I think everybody kind of talks about him differently, but that has a lot to do with the fact that he's had a lot of different seasons in his career. He's had a power season. He's had a speed season. He had an OBP season, reduced his strikeout rate last year. So what kind of hitter is he? Can he put it all together? And then personality-wise and, you know, the work ethic-wise and sort of the whole baseball, they call him, Matheny has this phrase that he's used a lot called baseball rats, mm-hmm. And he said he just likes having all these baseball rats scurrying around the clubhouse. And my goodness, man, that's what Jason Hayward is. I mean, he will just talk baseball. You know, the topic of SEC basketball will come up, and he'll go, yeah, okay, back to baseball. And the guy he really digs just being part of or holding court. When they're talking about baseball, dialing up highlights or asking questions of pitchers, or he approached Matt Carpenter one of the first days down here and said, when do you hit? Can I hit with you? And Matt Carpenter, who is, mind you, older than Jason Hayward and also has less time in the majors, said, why do you want to hit with me, man? You're the veteran in this equation. And Hayward just wanted to hang out, just wanted to talk. And so they meet at 7 a.m., and meet in the cage. And, you know, the coaches have said sometimes they're not even hitting. They're just in there chatting. I mean, he fits in. Now, where does he fit in offensively? That, my friend, is the question. You know, that's going to be a key to their season. They cannot survive with the offense they had last season. And the best place for them to upgrade is in right field and in the number two spot, both of the places where they just were atrocious, where they had no production. They had a speed bump in the lineup, and they had a glove-first middle infielder-like production from right field. Can Hayward fix that? If he can, then the offense is good.
In fairness, nobody wants to talk about SEC basketball.
All right. Well, SEC football, then.
Okay,
I mean, yes. So I just picked...
You Mizzou guys, forget. You guys are still new to this conference.
We used to be new. What? I mean, how many SEC championships? You know, Mizzou is
how many championships?
Two
none. Championship game. Oh, championship games. Okay. Yeah.
Two for two. How many has Georgia been since Mizzou showed up?
I was in Columbia this fall. I'm trying to remember what happened there.
I saw a division winner.
You did see one division winner. Oh, what a crappy division that was. Anyway, this is a whole different tangent. We don't need to go down.
And I would like to say that the Mizzou baseball team goes into Athens, sweeps them.
Yeah, well, under the first-year coach, yeah, you know.
Yeah. Or
actually, second-year coach. Anywho.
Just saying. We're from a basketball conference.
Yeah, what trophies do you have? Big ones.
Well, the football team won more games than the basketball team, so I should probably be quiet at this point in time.
Yeah. So, anywho.
Yeah.
And how weird is that? The Georgia guy is, like, my basketball team went to the NCAA tournament, and the Mizzou guy is talking about going to the SEC championship football game. Anywho, nobody wants to.
Yeah, I know.
That is really messed up.
Bizarre. Yeah, I agree.
So, have there been any surprises in Cardinal camp, or is it just the same old, they churn out this, you know, conveyor belt of success?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I don't think there's been any, like, revelations in camp. I've been struck by how far Randall Grichuk has come as a player and how he may have redefined his place with this organization.
I've always liked him.
What's that?
I've always liked him. Every time he hits the ball, he hits it just really, really hard.
He has some kind of freaky power.
Yeah.
He doesn't. It's not. And it used to be kind of a thing like where he doesn't get cheated. Now it's the kind of thing where, man, he puts a charge in the ball.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of evolved from one cliche to another. Gosh, he doesn't get cheated as a swing. Oh man, he really. You know, the ball sounds different coming off his bat. He has been. You know, I was asking the manager about this today if it was overstatement, but man, he's been the best all around player in camp. And I mean that like all around. He's been very impressive. You know, if they had questions, again, it's spring training, so you know you can dismiss it as small sample size theater or just a guy at the right place at the right time. We've all seen guys shine in spring that filter or that falter and fizzle come April, but I don't know. There's something else here. I mean, this is the quality of the play and what he's showing in drills and what he's just doing all around. I mean, he wanted to see if his athleticism, if maybe he could steal some more bases. So what's he doing? He's trying. He's pushing it, trying to figure out if what's possible. And you know, they told him he's got to make better contact. He's got to have better strike zone awareness. At the plate, so he's taking walks and he's swinging at fewer things. They told him you got to be able to hit righties if you're going to be an everyday player. Otherwise, you might just be a platoon guy or a guy off the bench. Well, he's hitting righties this spring, and not just with power, but in a lot of different ways, and hitting where he's pitched. I think he's been really strong, and maybe to a point where, you know. Early in spring, I wrote a story about how they're just going to have to, at some point in time, figure out if Randall Grichuk is a guy off the bench for them and a part-time starter against lefties who just crushes lefties, or if maybe they send him to Memphis and see if he's their next starting center fielder. And the manager said, you know, there's got to be an honest conversation during spring about how much playing time there is actually going to be available to Randall in the majors, because now he becomes this kind of one of those, that classic conflict of do you give him playing time so he can develop into maybe something more than they thought he was, or is he just good enough to get by as a part-time player or even a little used player in the majors? And man, I'm not even sure that that's the question anymore. I mean, the question is how much playing time should he get in the majors? It's just fascinating.
Wow. All right, well...
And maybe it's just because we haven't seen many guys like him, you know, around here. You know, that kind of young, lots of athleticism. You know, kind of one of those high ceiling toolsy types. I mean, Oscar Tavares was a sublime hitter, had lots of talent, but you know, he wasn't going to wow you. Base running, he was in Hawaii in right field. He had a good arm, and they flirted with the notion of him being a center fielder at some point in time, but that wasn't going to be his future. You know, Colton Wong has a lot of things going for him. You know, he's got a lot of athleticism and high upside, but he doesn't have that. He has that surprise power, that kind of ambush power, not that natural crazy power. And so maybe there's some of that going on. You know, you get a guy like that, and he stands out.
All right, well, not to keep you too much longer, although you are driving across the great state of Florida. Man, I do not miss Florida one bit.
I have all the time in the world.
And I'm sure some people could listen to you all day.
No, I can't think of one.
I'm sure there are. Anywho, this division, I mean, so much has been written and talked about in this division. What do you see in this division?
I'm a Cub believer. Do we have a nickname for them, for that person yet? I think they're good
this year. I'm a Cub believer long term. I really am. I just don't know that this is the year.
Yeah, I think they got a pretty interesting mix. When we go back to the pitching. I think they're pitching.
Yeah.
I think it's deeper than people give it credit when you start assigning realistic roles. Lester, Arrieta. That's a 1 and a 1A, as far as I'm concerned. I think Jake Arrieta is really good. And then you start going down through their list, and all of a sudden, it's like, they actually could rely on that guy to throw 180 innings. And yeah, that guy, he could probably do a 4 ERA and give him a lot of innings. That's pretty good. You start thinking in those terms and you go, wow, that's a team who, is going to be in a lot of games. They got firepower in the bullpen. It'll be interesting to see what former Cardinal Jason Mott and some of the other moves they've made and some of the guys that they're looking to in the bullpen, how all of that kind of hastens the maturity of the relievers out there, I'm eager to see that. They're going to have some growing pains with their offense, to be sure. There's a lot of strikeouts in there. But you know what else there is a lot of? Is power.
Oh, man. There are divisions that don't have as much power as that lineup does.
You think about it. They got 20 home run power at how many positions, whereas other teams are lucky to have 20 home run power at a key position that used to be a given for 20 home runs.
Right, a third base. How many third basemen hit 20 homers?
Exactly, in this division.
Yeah.
Look around. So they have the great equalizer. Yeah, they're going to strike out, and that's one out. But they put the ball over the wall, that's guaranteed one run. And that can solve a lot of problems in a game that is just aching for runs. I've seen so many 1-0, 1-1, 2-1 games in the spring, and I saw a lot of 1-0 games last year. The Cardinals thrived on those games. They lived off of them because of how scant offense they had. But, you're talking about a Cubs team that at some point in time, if their gears mesh, they could take off offensively.
Well, see, and I believe
even
that too.
If their gears don't mesh,
yeah,
they still could pulp mistakes. And one home run a game is really different these days than it used to be.
I get what you're saying. I agree. I just don't know if it's quite, young guys are still young guys. And that's kind of where I am.
Yeah.
And I think the talent is there.
Well, it's worked for the Cardinals.
It has. But the Cardinals' young guys always seem to be really old. Does that make sense?
Chris Bryant doesn't look too young.
No. Oh, Chris. No, I said the Cardinals guys.
Yeah, Jake Arrieta doesn't look. I know. I'm just saying. Some of these guys don't look too.
Chris Bryant doesn't, but it is still spring. And
Anthony Rizzo is a beast.
Oh, he's really good. He is really, really good.
Yeah, he's the next generation of the strong NL Central first baseman, for a long time to come. So I don't know. Who's better than the Cubs?
Who has more talent? Nobody.
No, but who's gonna, over the course of 162, who's got a better chance to win 90 games than the Cubs?
The Cardinals.
Division? And
I think the Pirates could do it. You know, I think they lose a lot with Russell Martin going. That's big to me. But here, I just don't know that I buy this the year the Cubs. And you could tell me that they're going to win the 2016 World Series, and I'll say, yeah, I can see that. But I don't know if it's 15. And I could be totally wrong. And I see that. I see this as a division full of teams that all have great ifs. That there are five teams that, if everything breaks right, could win the division.
Huh.
If That's everything breaks wrong, I see four teams that could finish last.
Ooh, now that's definitely true. I agree with that.
Yeah. Actually, and like I've said before, I don't see the Cubs winning the division. So I've said I see four teams that could finish first and four teams that could finish last. If. Yeah. And there's a lot of ifs in that. I mean, you know, you look at the Reds, there's a ton of ifs. But if those things do happen, and I mean, is it that much of a stretch to say if Joey Votto is Joey Votto, if Jay Bruce is Jay Bruce, if Leake does exactly what he's done, and they get one surprise in the rotation, and the bullpen is what it was from 2000 to 2013 instead of what it was in 2014. I mean, that's not a... Those are all ifs, and you got to have all those click together, but none of those are huge leaps of faith to me.
I mean, I think you're but talking about teams that change.
I still see them as a fourth or fifth place team. Don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Again, it could happen, and I think you could say that about the Pirates. You could say that about the Brewers. You could say that about the Cardinals, and you could say that about the Cubs.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I kind of see what you're saying. I mean, their probabilities are all different. It's like the same idea. They're all playing a game of chance.
Right.
It's just what game of chance they're playing. The Cardinals are rolling dice.
Right.
You know, the Pirates are playing Yahtzee. You know, the Cubs are playing Bingo. And the Reds are playing Powerball.
Yeah.
And then their odds all stack up in that way. I mean, like you said, it's, you know, if the Cardinals can roll, you know, double sixes, they'll win the division. You know, or if they can roll evens,
but yeah, win the division. I mean, the thing is, they don't have to hit on 15, you know?
No, they don't. Yeah, right.
So
yeah, and whereas I see exactly where we're going. I do think that the Reds have the wider bandwidth of possibility,
easily the widest
in the division.
Yeah.
It's remarkable what they have here. And so here, can I ask you a question? I know it's your show, but can I ask you a question?
I'm always open for questions. You host the best podcast in baseball. This is, you know.
I don't host. Bernie Miklas hosts it. I am the sidecar. I'm the sidekick.
You're the boy wonder
in that show.
Bucky? I think you're Bucky.
Yeah, I am the Bucky to his Captain America. That's right. That's a good way to put it.
I'm sorry. You know, that image is in my head right now, and I need to go bleach my eyeballs.
Why? Bucky becomes the Winter Soldier, man. He's one bad mamma jamma.
Yeah, I'm thinking young Bucky.
Oh, okay. You're thinking like World War II.
Right. I'm like old school. I'm not.
You know, that's fine. Not. Jack Kirby Bucky.
Yes. All right.
But so here's my question.
Okay.
Is this the year that the Reds have to win and then the window closes?
If there's still an opening, yeah. I mean, I think you see this team, to me, I wouldn't be surprised if they're in the crapper at the All-Star break. Once the national media leaves town, Brian Price is on his way out of town, Johnny Cueto's on his way out of town, Aroldis Chapman's on his way out of town.
Wow. But Pete Rose is still in town.
until somebody pays him more.
Wow, that would be... I mean, that would be disappointing.
But the thing is,
the All-Star game and then tear everything apart.
If they're 10, 15 games back, I mean,
there's a second wild card.
There is a second wild card, and we saw what the second wild card did last year. But I don't. I mean,
what did the second wild card do last year?
They won the World Series.
Oh right, I got you. Okay.
All right. Yeah.
I was
agreeing with you, basically. But the other thing is, you saw the Cubs send Jeff Smarja and get Addison Russell. I mean,
that's a great point, man.
I mean, what can you get for Johnny Cueto? I mean, Jeff Smarja is a fine pitcher and all, but Johnny Cueto is an ace. And if you're not going to re-sign him, you know.
Yeah. I mean, the bigger thing is what they got for Lester. That's the one to look for.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, Smarja had another year of control.
Right, and they traded him. No, that's a good point.
Right.
But.
You know, so the comparison is Lester.
Right.
You know, or, that would be the comparison.
That's
still a pretty good haul.
But, and then, okay, Aroldis Chapman.
Well, that's the bigger one. I actually think that's the better chip.
Yeah, because of the extra year control.
Well, and also how people think in July.
Right.
You know, I mean, look, an ace is quaint, but a contender who gets to that point in July already has an ace. They're looking to fortify, you know, a rotation, sure. But if they want a guy who changes how they look, you know, 102 from the left side in the ninth, oof, that changes how every team looks.
Yeah. I mean, I think
another year of control.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly think if they're out of it at the break, those Cueto and Chapman could be dealt and should be.
Wow.
Honestly.
Wow. Aroldis Chapman, St. Louis Cardinal. No.
I'm pretty sure he wouldn't be going there, and I'm pretty sure he wouldn't be going to Houston.
Wow. What do those two teams have in common? That's pretty good.
Am I wrong?
No. 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 Aroldis Chapman, New York Met, maybe? Really upset things in the NL East?
Or can you imagine Aroldis him in
Chapman.
Boston?
Or Miami Marlin, as that team makes a run.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, it would be sad. So, a follow-up question, then. If that happens, is that going to be a breach of goodwill with the fan base there?
You know, it's a good question, but it's almost that you have to do because it's not working, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
the only prudent. I mean, maybe they should have dealt Johnny Cueto last July.
Yeah,
and if they could have gotten Addison Russell for Johnny Cueto, then
Addison
Russell plus. Quite honestly, if you got Jeff Smarja.
That's a fair question.
I know there were people in the front office who wanted to do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's all in the view of the window, you know. I mean, the Reds have that look of the 06 Cardinals a little bit, where it's an aging core, and can it just hold it together one more time?
Right.
Sneak in and play that encore. You know, and general manager of that team is the same general manager of the Reds. So, I don't know, you know. I hear where you're coming from. It's almost like they want to get that, you know, last hit from this group they've paid so much to get from, or get something from, and they haven't, that they're holding on when they really should be rebuilding.
Except, you know, Joey Votto still has 9 years left on that deal.
Wow. You and I should both be so lucky to have 9 years left on our deal.
Yeah, I would take 1 year of that deal left.
yeah.
Well, and then, Brandon Phillips will still be owed 2 years and $24 million after this year, I think it is. After this year. No, 27, because I think he makes 12 this year and he has 339.
Wow.
So, You know,
it's a fascinating thing. You know, I mean, everybody else is getting better. And they're, you know, the Reds are stagnated, so we'll see.
Right, maybe the Brewers, too, you know.
Maybe the Brewers, too.
Except they can hit the ball.
Well, they have a great ballpark to hit, and they do have, you know, I mean, they're good. I think they have a narrower bandwidth than everybody else anywhere in the division other than the Cardinals. You know, the ifs we were talking about it.
Yeah.
The Reds have a wider bandwidth. I think the Cardinals probably have the narrowest, and the Brewers have the next narrowest. Though their potential is less than so many other teams.
Right. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fascinating division, and you have, you know, I think I was talking to Doug Melvin about this, and he was just talking about it's a cycle, and you don't want to get caught in the middle. And right now, I think the Reds and the Brewers might be in the middle.
The in-between, that's good. That's a betweeners. That's an interesting way to look at it. Like a hitter who can't quite get his timing.
Yeah.
He's caught in between. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, they're all going to be good enough that it won't take many wins to win the division, probably, because they'll all be clustered around each other.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that anybody gets more than 91 wins. 90, 91?
It's hard to. Yeah, I mean, if somebody does, then that's a really good team.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the thing is you're talking about a really terrific team that wins 95 games in this division.
And you know, this is a division that we got rid of the Astros, and that changed this division a lot.
Yeah. It made it harder to get that second wild card because you couldn't beat up on a team.
Right.
Yeah.
Though. You know, I guess since they've had a second wild card, we've had it 2 years now, right? Or 3 years?
Yeah.
Two.
Yep.
Since then, we've had, the NL Central has had three of the four teams.
Yeah, with Houston still in division, they would have gone 4-for-4, though, probably.
And in St. Louis, in San Francisco, they wouldn't have had their third World Series.
Right. That's true.
5 years, which is crazy. Anywho, well, Derek, thank you so much, dude.
Yep.
I appreciate it. Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, at dgould, G-O-O-L-D, on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
The best podcast in baseball, which may be the best podcast in baseball, but it certainly has the best name in baseball. I love it. So much. It makes me so happy.
We have to thank a listener for coming up with it. And hopefully we figure it out so we can do this second season this year.
I've noticed it's been lacking.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of reasons for that, and
Trust me, all of them
disappointing.
Trust me, I understand. We've been there.
Yeah.
And also, STL Today, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, if you want to actually read more words than just 150 characters or have someone talk to you.
I'm a big proponent of the written word.
Yeah, me too. I'm not real good at it, but I do like...
Here we go. So we need to have 20 minutes more of this podcast of me building you up and... You wrote one of the... I mean, you wrote one of the funner stories of spring, I think, that I read anywhere. So, you know, there's a compliment for you. And
I appreciate
it. Spring is not the easiest time to come up with stories, especially stories that have a little bit of whimsy and a whole lot of insight. And your story on how they pair up and play catch, I'm not saying that was the only good story. You did a lot of good stories. And spring isn't done yet, so I expect a lot more. But I just think that was creative. And,
it was Faye's idea. Well, I got to give John Fay credit. He just said, hey, you know, I've always wondered about the partners. He says, why don't you do something on that? And so
there you go. You
give it
that's
Fay
teamwork,
credit.
Man.
We've got a great team.
Yeah, that's the way it ought to be. That's the only way a beat operates is if, you know, you have the kind of teamwork where you both are pulling in the same direction and you utilize each other's strengths. I think that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I really mean that. I mean, you know, like, I would like to have a story like that every spring where it's like, hey, you know what? I wrote about something just a little bit different, off the beaten path. I found a story that was just slightly view askew, and, you know, you did that.
And I that was 6 weeks ago, and I've sludged through since, so... But hey,
and
we get the
every word of it. It resonated for 6 weeks.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, brother. We will see a lot of each other. In the next week or even in the next week or two. So.
Looking forward to it. It should be good.
We'll get beers at Neons. We always go to Neons for some reason. So, thanks, Derek.
We do. I think because it's open late.
I think that's it. I think it is.
Yeah. All right. Well, I look forward to seeing you there. First round is on you.
Always is. All right, brother.
There you go. We're going to be real quick on this because Derek went on and on and on, as you heard. God love him. Derek won't be at Motor for the opening day Eve extravaganza like he was last year, but John and I will be with Rob Beer Temple, 6 o'clock, April 5th. That is Easter at Motor Pub on Main Street over the Rhine. This is the CDOT show. We're doing this, hopefully keep doing this weekly through the season. We'll see how much I can keep up and do this. And please rate and review on iTunes. We're available on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever else we can get through, SoundCloud. And thanks for joining us.